Rowdy Nation. Purple and gold family. Stand to your feet. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Come on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, welcome to the island, man, it's crazy in here. A whole sea of purple and gold waving in here. Keep a plank on the Shark Tank, traders beware, because we got a whole bunch of rowdy sailors in here.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone tuning in whenever and however you're watching or listening, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, or pretty much anywhere you find podcasts, you can find us. March Madness is here. The first four took place last night in Dayton, Ohio, and as we're here on a Wednesday morning, and right now very excited to be rejoined by former East Carolina head coach, Mac McCarthy. Coach, we appreciate your time.
I'm always glad to be on, and especially this time of year, a little March Madness, a little NASCAR, Augusta on deck. This is a great time of the year for me.
Yes, sir. Great time of year, and obviously you do a lot of ESPN Plus analyst work, primarily on the women's side, and primarily for your Virginia Tech Hokies, but you also had the chance to see some other teams, and we'll certainly talk about the women's game in a moment. But you know, before we talk about the here and now, I wanted to take a trip down memory lane, if we could, and reflect back on your time at Auburn as well as a head coach at Chattanooga. What are some of your top memories from those years, especially that 96-97 team where you made a run to the Sweet 16?
Yeah, I've been really lucky, Bubba, to be a part of a lot of good teams. And my second year in coaching, we went to the NCAA back when it was, I think we were 28 teams. And we were Virginia Tech and an independent and made it into the tournament. Got upset in the first round, to be honest, by Western Michigan, which wasn't a lot of fun. But getting there was fun. We played at Notre Dame in the first round. And then Auburn, it took a little while to get going. But once we got it going, it went to five straight NCAAs. And the last team I was there with in 85, we went the year before with Charles Barkley. Charles went to the pros, and we had a really good team coming back, a couple freshman guards that were highly recruited, and it took us a while to get going. We finished eighth in the regular season and then caught fire in the SEC tournament, won four games in 4 days, played at 9:30, 9:30, 9:30, and then played at noon on Sunday against our arch rival Alabama and Wimp Sanderson and beat them. And we were on such a roll that we ended up beating Purdue, and then we beat Kansas. I think Danny Manning was maybe a freshman that year, and then got beat by North Carolina, ironically, in Birmingham in a really close game. But Lebo was on that team. Kenny Smith was on that team. Wolf was on that team. They had a really good team, although they got beat the next round by Villanova, who went on to win it all that year.
And fast forward to your time at Chattanooga on the 96-97 team, you know, and really, you know, prior to discussing that team, that your time at Chattanooga had been very successful. Prior to that, you'd won several conference championships and regular season titles before. And the only time in your first 7 years that you went to the dance was when you did not win the regular season title but won the tournament. And then everything really built up to that 96-97 team that made the Sweet 16 run, because you had been to the NCAA tournament, what, like four times in 6 years or 5 years? And obviously some seeds, I think between 12th and 15th. So you were facing the likes of Wake Forest with Rodney Rogers and Randolph Childress, with Jock Vaughn, and then also Ostertag, Pollard at Kansas, et cetera, with some other teams.
Yeah, at Connecticut with Ray Allen and the Marshall brothers, or not brothers, but the Marshall guys, Danielle and Donnie. And then before that, we ran into Oklahoma. They were the number one seed overall with Stacey King and Mookie Blaylock and Ricky Grace and one of the Grant brothers. I don't know if it was Horace or Harvey, but one of them was out there. One of them was at Clemson. But, yeah, we had gotten some bad draws. But like you mentioned, when we went in 96-97, we had an old team. We had five fifth-year guys, you know, through junior college or transfers or red shirts or that kind of thing. And because we had been four times in 5 years, we weren't just happy to make it anymore. and then we got a good draw. We got it, and the thing that was a good draw for us was somebody not having a big center. We had run into Ostertag and Pollard. You mentioned Rodney Rogers. We had run into Travis Knight with Connecticut, Stacey King obviously with Oklahoma. We had run into all these great centers, and Georgia didn't have a great center. And all of a sudden, we're up 22-2, and we hang on to beat Tubby Smith. Gigi missed a shot at the buzzer that I don't know if it would have sent it in overtime or would have won the game. I'm not sure. It's been a little while. And then we ran into Illinois in the second round, and they were the same thing. Lon Kruger, great coach, had a really good team, but no big guy. They had really good guards, had a really nice team out of the Big Ten, but we handled them pretty easily. We held them to one field goal in the last 7 minutes of the game, went a little zone and mixed things up. And then we got to go back to Birmingham, ironically again, to play Providence. And they were the worst team we played. But Pete Gillen had God, Sham, God. And we couldn't stay between God, Sham, God and the basket. That was a little bit of a problem. They also had Austin Crozier, who was a lottery pick. And they did have a big center. I think his name was Brown. Can't even remember his first name. But they beat us in a really close game. We missed enough free throws and layups to win the game comfortably. And, of course, they go on the next game to take Arizona into triple overtime. And Arizona ends up winning with Miles Simon and that group.
Yep, and that 96-97 game against Providence, if we need to have any proof that, our phones are listening to what we say and, everything that we Google, that came up in my suggestions this morning on YouTube, that Sweet 16 matchup that you just mentioned with the Providence Friars. And so I checked out about 5 minutes of that and was showing that to my son a little earlier.
Yeah, we had a big team. We didn't have anybody as big as their center, but we could go with a big front line. We're 6'8", 6'8", 6'8", and we pounded them pretty good and got a lot of close shots to the basket. And we had one of those nights where the ball just didn't roll in, and we missed enough free throws in the first half that we should have been ahead. And we came back and took the lead late in the second half, but they pulled away at the end. And if I could coach one game over in my whole career, that would probably be the one I would pick.
So moving on to this year's tournament, obviously you have Alabama, who a lot of folks are really high on and rightfully so with their body of work, despite some of the things they have going on there that, pretty well documented, won't even go there. But and then you have Kansas, who once again is very much in the mix after winning it a season ago. Who are some of your favorites to cut down the nets this year?
Yeah, I think you're right about Alabama. They have a lot of answers to the questions that you run into, the obstacles you run into. They play really good defense. They're long. They're athletic. They're very deep. They can get in foul trouble and still be okay. They can shoot the three. They're really good in transition. They're great on the offensive glass. And on top of that, much like Syracuse back in the day with Carmelo Anthony, they've got the best player in the country, Brandon Miller. I wasn't even sure he was the best freshman in the country, but he has certainly proven me wrong. And I don't think there's any question he's the number one draft pick, and he can carry a team, can do everything on the floor at 6'9", and handles it like a guard and rebounds like a big guy and shoots the heck out of it. So the only thing that can stop Alabama in my mind is the off the court stuff. And that's going to get more and more scrutiny as the tournament goes on. There are a lot of teams that are, capable. Purdue with Zach Edey, I know they struggled a little bit late. They're probably the most vulnerable number one seed. I really like Kansas. They can guard you. They've got good guard play, and they can shoot the ball too. I don't know whether self being there or not being there will be a big factor. Houston, if Sasser's 100%, they'd be a pretty good bet too, but I just don't know if he's going to be. Apparently he is going to play in the first round game. I might try to sit him, but if he's 100% healthy, who knows? That's probably the right thing to do, get him back in there. And you saw what they looked like against Memphis in the American Conference Finals. So You know, they looked a little bit more vulnerable because he's such a guy that can pick you up and carry you offensively and make big baskets at the end. UCLA had an argument about being a one seed, and, you know, Duke is playing really good basketball. I think Texas is real danger, and Texas and Houston are on a collision path to see who goes to Houston for the Final Four. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't come down to those two, you know, going for one of those spots. But, you know, Marquette and Duke, I mentioned, are in the same region with Purdue. Michigan State's in that region too. There are going to be some great battles. Gonzaga, you know, we usually are talking about them. They're kind of under the radar, but I'm not so sure that they can't make it out of their region too. They're in there with Kansas and UCLA. That's probably the toughest region the West is, but I still think Kansas, with their experience of last year and that kind of thing, is probably one of the favorites. A lot of potential first round upsets. Charleston is really good, but they didn't get a great draw in San Diego State, who's also good. You got VCU and St. Mary's. Again, VCU is a really good team, but St. Mary's, a real contrast in styles, and St. Mary's has been tested, and it'll be a tough one right there. But we know inevitably there are going to be some of those double-digit winners in the first round.
Yep, a season ago you had St. Mary's making that memorable run to the Elite Eight before they fell to the North Carolina Tar Heels, who were making a bit of a Cinderella run on their own, you know, getting to the championship game before falling to Kansas. But one of the storylines you mentioned, the Texas Longhorns, former Texas coach Shaka Smart and what he's doing at Marquette, that's something that is intriguing because they're on opposite sides. I mean, it's probably not going to happen, but there's that possibility where you could have a Marquette-Texas national championship game.
Isn't it funny how you get these storybook kind of matchups, and you know, there's always some irony in the brackets. You know, some folks think they do it on purpose. Some folks think it just randomly happens. But you know, I don't know. But regardless, when you get 68 teams together, there's going to be some conflicts. There's going to be some things folks have in common and that kind of thing. And all we know is it's one of the most fun times of year. It's about 3 weeks of absolute joy.
You referenced a few minutes ago what Pat Kelsey's done down at the College of Charleston. We've seen several coaches have success there. Perhaps he's going to take it to another level. We shall see. But, you know, a lot of that will depend on exactly how long he is in Charleston, because he's a hot commodity. And, you know, you also have a program like FAU that's having a history-making season, 31-3.
Yeah, Dusty May's done a great job at Florida Atlantic, you know, and he's been in the SEC at Florida, and he's been at Louisiana Tech before that, and really has done a great job. They've been good all year. I think they would have gotten in regardless. And you mentioned Pat Kelsey. He has a really strange team. They don't have anybody. I think they maybe two guys, maybe average 10 points a game, but they didn't have any of the top 25 scorers in the CAA. But he's got about 12 guys that can play, and he's got six or seven or maybe even eight that can score 25 plus in a single game. They play really hard, really aggressively on both ends. They rebound the basketball, and they're going to be a tough matchup. If they can win that first game against San Diego State, then they'd play the winner of Virginia Furman. That's another potential first-round upset, not because Virginia is not good, but Virginia keeps the game close. They're going to play the game in the 60s, 50s maybe, and Furman can score a little bit. Bob Ritchie's done a good job there. He's another hot name that people are going to mention, but I think College of Charleston could be playing that second weekend if they can get by that first round with San Diego State against Brian Dutcher, who replaced Coach Fisher out there after Coach Fisher had been at Michigan before that.
Looking at the East region, I think it's, you know, a lot of teams, or at least a few, could come out of there. Obviously, Duke's extremely hot. They've won 9 in a row, and they're – very young but talented team, has really come together under first-year head coach John Shire. I think something like 5 out of their top 7 are freshmen. And then you have You already referenced Purdue. Memphis has been very hot under Penny Hardaway. They've won something like 14 out of 17, with their losses coming to number one Houston twice in very competitive games. And then obviously they defeated them to earn their way into the field, although they would have made it anyway. And then you had a one-point loss to Tulane. So Memphis could do some damage. And then ORU, they're a very intriguing story. They've won 30 games, won 17 straight, and they have, I think, at least four guys who were significant contributors back from that team that made the deep run a couple years ago where they beat Ohio State and Florida.
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about USC or Michigan State. And, you know, if you pick guards and coaches, Michigan State could be right there. They've got Tyson Walker, who's a transfer from Northeastern out of the CAA, who's playing great basketball. And, of course, Izzo has done this a few times. So we didn't even mention them. And, you mentioned Marquette and Duke being two of the hottest teams. Memphis has been a hot team. Tennessee was good all year, and they lost their point guard, but they're still really talented. They struggle to score some nights. A lot of people were picking that against Louisiana as a potential upset, but Tennessee guards you well enough to make a run themselves. So, that while Purdue might be the most vulnerable number one seed, that bracket is pretty competitive.
So we've mentioned 12 seeds in College of Charleston, and also Oral Roberts. Who are some others that you could see potentially being this year's St. Peter's? Obviously, I believe they were a 15 seed last year, but not necessarily a 15. But who are some teams that could be this year's, quote, Cinderella?
You know, I was listening to Jeff Goodman this morning on another show, and he really thinks that Colgate can upset Texas. You know, Texas obviously in a little bit of state of flux with, Rodney Terry, the interim coach, who's done a really good job, won the Big 12 tournament. And I've got him going to the Final Four. But he was intrigued by that matchup. And, not as big of sexy pick, Texas A&M and Penn State. Texas A&M, a 7 seed. I think they feel like they got disrespected a little bit, finished second in the SEC, went to the championship game, and I think Buzz Williams will play that chip on the shoulder pretty well. But Penn State, under Micah Shrewsbury, has done really well. And you've mentioned a couple coaches. Shrewsbury is one of the guys being mentioned for Georgetown, along with Providence's Ed Cooley. And supposedly it's Cooley's job to turn down. And you've got a really big matchup, maybe the most interesting matchup in the whole thing, with the Iona and UConn. UConn's playing good again after playing good early and then struggling a little bit. And they're playing good basketball again. And, of course, Patino, mentioned, rumored to have already taken the St. John's job. I doubt that has already happened. But, hey, who knows in this day and age? I'm sure if Chris Beard can get Ole Miss, Rick Pitino can probably get any job in the country too.
So when it's all said and done, who do you think will cut down the nets in Houston?
I'm just not going to bet against Alabama. Like I said before, they have so many answers to so many of the questions that you have to answer to do this. I really like what they've done. And Nate Oates is a really good coach coming from Buffalo and even the high school ranks before that. He's done an incredible job recruiting and coaches them well too. As much as it pains me being an Auburn guy, I think it'll be roll tide roll.
Shifting over to the women's side, obviously South Carolina is the 32-0 and just clearly the favorite, and they're trying to repeat and win their third title in something like, 5 or 6 years under Dawn Staley. And they've been very dominant, very much UConn-like. And speaking of UConn, I believe the Huskies are a number two seed. And how weird does it seem to say that they haven't won a national title since 2016?
Yeah, it really is. And you can tell how grumpy Ariema is that's the case. If you take South Carolina versus the field, you probably have a pretty good bet. There are some intriguing one seeds with Iowa and Indiana and Virginia Tech. And like you mentioned, UConn at a two and Stanford right there, battling for a one seed. There is more parity in the women's game than ever before. But two things make you think, I don't know about that, because South Carolina is so dominant, so deep, so good defensively. Can they have an off night, get beat? Yeah, they could. But another thing that would indicate that the parity doesn't run very deep is in the last 10 seasons, every number one seed has made it to the second weekend. Not one has got beaten in the first or second round. And I think they're probably pretty safe again this year. But the women's tournament is going to be really intriguing. A lot of ACC teams in there with Duke and Carolina and Florida State. We mentioned Virginia Tech, a top seed, Louisville. It's really kind of loaded. Miami's in the tournament again. They do a good job. It's going to be a really fun tournament. I'm looking forward to being part of it, doing radio for Virginia Tech women going forward. And like I mentioned, they played Chattanooga in the irony game, and then they would, if they win, they would get the winner of South Dakota State against Southern Cal. Obviously, Southern Cal is the bigger name. Lindsay Gottlieb has been to the tournament a number of times when she was at Cal, and then she was at Santa Barbara, coached in the NBA, has got Southern Cal back to the tournament for the first time in 9 years. But South Dakota State is a story we don't ever even hear about or talk about. They've been Division I for 15 years. They've been to 11 tournaments. It's really incredible what this guy's done. A guy named Aaron Johnston, and he's been there 23 years, but they've only been Division I eligible for the last 15 years. And they have not lost since they lost to South Carolina December the 15th. I think they've won 21 in a row.
As you mentioned, you're going to be describing the action as you have all season long for the Virginia Tech Hokies, primarily on the TV side. And I think this is what your fourth broadcast on the radio side. So as you take a look at your Hokies, being an alum, how deep of a run do you think they can make?
They could get all the way to the Final Four. They've got the two-time ACC Player of the Year, Elizabeth Kitley, who is from just outside of Greensboro. I think Summerfield, North Carolina, maybe is the hometown. Her dad played at Wake Forest, Ralph Kitley. I tried to recruit him at Chattanooga. Obviously, didn't do a very good job. But two-time Player of the Year is pretty impressive. She's 6'6", gives her a lot of advantages, really skilled. And the thing that has put them over the top, they have an Australian point guard named Georgia Amor, who at least in the month of February played as good as any point guard in the country, not named Caitlin Clark. She's been really, really good. And, she's averaging over 15 points a game and is just a dynamic player and can do a little bit of everything. Not real big. She's only about 5'5", maybe 5'6", but very athletic. And that's a pretty good – if you want to start a basketball team, start with a point guard and a center, and they've got both of them. And then Kenny Brooks, who's been to a million NCAAs, as he was building his resume up through the James Madison days.
Of course, the Hokies, like you mentioned, the number one seed taking on Chattanooga. So, unique matchup there from the standpoint of you having been at Chattanooga all those years. But I know you talked about the Mocs being an unbelievable story, picked to finish last and going to the dance. East Carolina picked to finish last by the coaches in the American, ended up winning the tournament after finishing third in the regular season. Ken McNeil tying the school record for wins thus far, 23-9 for the Pirates, and they have a first-round matchup. They're the 13th seed, taking on the Texas Longhorns down in Austin, who are the four, and they have a lot of size, and that's one of the things that Kim McNeil said she's really worried about in this matchup.
Yeah. Kim, they have to overcome the size thing with a lot of speed and quickness and athleticism. And Kim, what a great job she's done. We all know how hard it is sometimes to win in basketball at East Carolina on the men's side and the women's side. And she's done an incredible job, got better every year, added some pieces here and there. And they play a unique style of defense, a really aggressive, amoeba type zone. It isn't the amoeba zone, but it changes shapes, and they can take certain players away. And it's a really difficult preparation. Texas will struggle with some of that, but in the end, size does matter down low, and whether it's rebounding the basketball or getting some easy shots. But it could be a really intriguing game, and what an upset it would be. And Kim McNeil's already set some precedents here that are going to be tough to continue to accomplish. But she's done an incredible job, and what a good season. And I'm glad to see Mox. I'm still thinking about the other game. Pirate Nation excited about this.
And as you take a look at the Pirate roster, one of the things that really stands out is the key contributions that they've received from Danae McNeil, who's a Clemson transfer, 17.5 points per game, and first team AAC player. And then you have Micah Dennis, who was a significant contributor as well from Oklahoma State. And then you have a couple who are homegrown, one who was in her first season, Amaya Joyner from nearby Farmville, essentially averaged a double-double if you round up, 10.5 points, 9.7 rebounds.
Yeah. And I remember I did one television game a year ago, and I remember seeing McNeil at practice and thinking, gosh, she's really talented and long, and, can get out in those passing lanes, built for that zone, but also built to get up and down the floor and get some easy baskets. And, Kim has added some really nice pieces along the way, and, that fit her style of play. And of course, there's another connection there. She was an assistant for Kenny Brooks at JMU too.
Coach, kind of shifting gears back over to the men's side at East Carolina as we wrap up our conversation. Mike Schwartz, first year, 16-17, most wins for the program since 2013, 2014. And you had guys who were already in the program like Javon Small and Brandon Johnson really step up. Javon unfortunately went down 3 or 4 games, I believe it was, into AAC play. And then you had a guy like Ezra Saar, who was very good early in the year, hit some bumps like you would kind of guess, early in AAC play. But then he really got it together and played much better the second time around the schedule. And then in the conference tournament, not only did the Pirates win a game, they gave number one Houston all they wanted for 25 to 30 minutes of that ball game. And Ezra Saar had 18 points and 19 rebounds.
Yeah, I think Coach Schwartz did a really good job in his first year by all accounts. And I saw him play early some, and they got off to a pretty good start. But, I think the big thing, two big things to take away from Coach Schwartz and his staff, who was a really good bunch of guys. First of all, they really were competitive almost all the time. And, that bodes well. It gets you a little closer, gets that confidence going, and, people are expecting even more of you, and you're expecting more of yourself. And I think the fact that they were, competitive more times than not, it kind of bodes well for the future. And the other thing that Coach Schwartz has done is, the people have really taken to him. I hear all the time about how impressive he is and how they really believe in him and how he really is sincere about, being here and wanting to build this program and doing things the right way. And it just strikes me as a good situation that many people are talking about him, even though they didn't necessarily have the season that they wanted. But people are excited about ECU basketball on both sides of the hallway down there in the practice facility.
Yeah, and there's so many unknowns coming into this year, especially on the men's side. And as you mentioned, 16 wins far exceeded what most people outside the program expected, because the men were also picked to finish last. I want to say we finished ninth, and that's certainly not what coach and the staff wanted, but I think they would say it's a pretty solid foundational year overall. And you could tell the Pirates were playing their best basketball down the stretch, despite not having Javon Small and also having Benjamin Biala beat up and being really you know, short as far as the bench and playing six or seven guys. But you had Iowa State transfer Jaden Walker step up and really do a nice job at point guard and flirt with a couple of triple doubles.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. Solid foundation year and good reason to be excited. And the way the transfer portal is, and the way rosters can change in a hurry, I'd say things are looking up pretty good for the Pirates.
Really appreciate your time this morning, Coach, and we'd love to have you back on later in the tournament, maybe prior to the Sweet 16 or Final Four.
Always fun. Just let me know what you need, guys.
First down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it on, get involved, get the wave going like a hurricane.